It's time for our Voice of the Valley program, and I'm with Dr. Rick Becker, who is a North Dakota congressional candidate here, running in the June 11th primary, and also the lead man and one of the lead folks in the initiative for property tax reform, or actually to abolish property tax, we should say. And Rick, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
You bet. I'm happy to be on with you.
Okay, Rick, big question is, this thing didn't pass about a dozen years ago or whatever, and one of the big reasons that somebody told me is that they supported the idea, but there was sort of a retroactive mechanism. Now, your new initiative does not do that if this measure passes in November. Tell us a little bit about the focus behind the initiative.
Yes. So there are some significant differences from the 2012 measure. One is that it leaves the locals in more control. So when I say locals, I mean cities and counties. So it does two things. This measure does exactly what the legislators promised 12 years ago with the previous measure. They said, hey, this is not a good idea. Just say no, and we will give you relief and reform. And they have not. So after 12 years of giving them every opportunity to give significant relief and significant reform, and after having them failed us, this measure does provide those two things exactly. So it provides relief in the sense that the state would be responsible for paying everything that people are paying now in property tax. There are a couple of small exceptions, but by and large, everything that someone is paying this year or next year in property tax is what the state will be forced to replace. And what they do is, the measure says, and it will be in the Constitution, the state must replace to every subdivision, so every county, city, school district, township, everything that they were raising, everything that they levied in 2024. Now, that's huge relief because that much money then stays in the taxpayers' pockets. There has never been bigger relief than what is in this measure. The important thing to recognize that along with this relief, we are not losing control because the state replaces that money, no strings attached. They can't ask questions. There's no coming to Bismarck to beg for money. There's no pitting east versus west or urban versus rural. Whatever was levied, boom, the state replaces it. Now, some people might argue to say, well, the state really doesn't have that much money. That's a separate argument, and I'm happy to take that argument on because the state has more than enough money, way more than enough money to replace that much. Okay, so then the second part is the reform, because the state is replacing everything up to the levels of next year. That's all fine and good. In fact, it's more than fine and good. It's amazing and wonderful because it's going to just drive our economy like nothing ever before. But we know that cities, counties, school districts, townships, their needs monetarily are going to increase. Things cost more. You know, a township will say, well, right, it's gravel's going to cost a lot more. We need to hire more officers. We need to buy a new fire truck. Yes. And if this weren't going to be on the ballot, if it didn't pass, how would they address those increased budget needs? Well, they would increase property taxes. So we know going forward, well, property taxes are going to be no longer in the form that we know them, which is a valuation-based property tax. So the state replaces everything up to this level. Then the locals are in charge for everything they need above that level. They budget exactly how they budget now. They determine what their budget is. And if they know that the state is going to replace a huge amount, all of it up to this point, everything they need over that amount, A, they determine how much that is. B, they determine how they're going to get the revenue. So the citizens are not 100% off the hook. They're off the hook by everything they're paying now, but whatever their city or county wants to increase, they're still going to be on the hook for. The beautiful thing is the reform. I'm getting to the reform part of it. Mm-hmm. The reform is that they must do it by a means other than valuation-based property tax. So what do we not like about property tax? Number one, we don't like the fact that nobody understands it, right? There's assessed value, which happens to be half of full and true value, and then there's a mill levy, and how are the mills determined? What does a mill mean? We have no idea. Nobody understands it, which allows our elected officials to pass the buck. The locals say, well, it's the state, and the state says, well, it's the locals, and the problem is the taxpayers are getting screwed over in between. Okay, what else don't we like about it? Well, we don't like the valuations. So You wait to find out how much your property is valued. You may not have done anything to it, and yet, wow, there's a 10, 20, 30% increase in my valuation. So then the locals say, well, we're not raising your taxes, but you're just paying more in taxes because of your valuation. So the idea that you have to pay more in taxes because of things going on around you is not fair. It's inherently unfair. Okay, so we do away with that. But your locals can raise taxes by way of various fees, by actually implementing a tax. It could still be on property, but it's not going to be valuation-based. So these are things that are reform, because now we're raising taxes in a way that is more transparent. People understand it. They have more access to it. So this is going to be at a public meeting with public input. So do you like the idea that your locals are raising taxes for certain things? Great, you can hear about it. You can have your say about it. If you don't like it, it's more likely you can have them stop it. Which, by the way, is one of the things that some elected local officials don't like. They want to be able to raise taxes and not have people have such an easy way of having their say, which is not how things are supposed to work. So there is actually more control for the local elected officials, because they can now raise what they need above the amount the state's going to replace by any number of means, any number of ways that is tailored to the people in their community. And then the local individual has more control, because they can go to the meetings, they can give their input. And so this is what I mean by relief and reform, huge on both ends.
Now, earlier I had asked you about when this would go into effect, let's say it passed, you know, the one a dozen years ago. People that even approved of this idea didn't like it because it went back, I think, retroactively like a year or two. How long would this measure, if it passes, give the legislators or the local entities, how much time is involved before it would have to be implemented?
So it goes into effect January 1st of 2025. But the key to the wording is that it affects when taxes are levied. So you see, the taxes we pay in 2025 are levied in 2024. The taxes that are levied in 2025, which this measure would have an effect on, would be paid in 2026. Mm. So we're talking about the money that cities and counties would receive in 2026. That means that when this gets on the ballot, at that point in time, so we're talking in a few months here, at that point in time, the legislature will be able to convene interim committees to study the property tax measure in the event it will pass. They did that in 2012. They'll do it again now. So that means 6 months that they can look at it ahead of time, ahead of even meeting as a legislature. Mm-hmm. Then they have the 4 months during the legislative session to hammer out more details. And if necessary, they can have another interim committee to go on through the entire year of 2025. Because again, we're talking about the state replacing money in 2026. So they've got a year and a half to deal with it. And they have the revenue coming in from the new biennium starting in July all the way through December to start being able to pay for those property tax replacements.
All right. Well, before I let you go, I'd be remiss to not talk about the congressional, your congressional candidate here in the June 11th primary. And what have some of the polling numbers showed you? What's the feel that you get out there for support with your campaign?
Well, the campaign, we are feeling really good. Our polling numbers early on showed us in the lead. Now, I will grant you that those polling numbers were so early that I don't know that they mean anything at this point. So really, the field has changed. We had three, then we were down to two. Now we're up to five candidates on the Republican side, two on the Democrat side. The most important thing is just that we are getting our message out. We're meeting people, and we'll do more polling, sure. But it doesn't change that we need to just really work hard and meet people, get the message out. And it's really all about, I think, what we are finding is that this is a battle between sort of the establishment, go along to get along, country club Republican mentality versus the grassroots, truly conservative. We need to get out there and save our country. We need a fighter to represent us. That's what we're looking at. It's a battle between those two camps. I naturally represent the grassroots camp, where I'm going to go out to Washington, D.C. and fight for these principles, no different than I did for the 10 years I was in the state legislature. You know, I garnered a reputation for a reason of being someone who is principled and uncompromising in their principles, yet able to accomplish significant things, passing significant legislation.
Thank you, Rick, for joining us on the show today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
There's Dr. Rick Becker, our guest here on today's Voice of the Valley.